Sairam, dear listeners, welcome to Radio Sai Answering Booth. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and this is a show we do together, don't we? As Swami would sing in one of his famous padyams, the meaning of which goes, "Let us move together, let us grow together, let us together foster the knowledge that we have earned." Well, that's what we do on the show. The knowledge is Swami's, the wisdom is Swami's, and He has given it to us in all His love and compassion. We come together week after week, share what we have learned, pull up each other, encourage and enthuse one another, and in the process, each of us can go further than we would have gone if we had to travel alone. A spiritual journey is indeed a path to be walked all by oneself. You really can't hold anyone or your circumstances responsible for your failings, but we can derive strength and courage from each other's learning. That's why satsangam, or good company, is always a key prescription for a spiritual aspirant. Often Swami would say about sankirtanam or bhajan singing with everyone in this manner. It is like taking a journey long. It is taking a journey with a convoy of cars. It could happen that one car's light might fail, but it doesn't matter because the light from the others will help us do the journey. Similarly, sometimes our enthusiasm in singing bhajans may dip, but when we do it in a group, the enthusiasm of the others lifts us up too. The same could be said about satsang too and our program. We come together, learn and grow together. Well, dear listeners, this week I have an interesting question as always, but I don't have a quote. Instead, I want to dive straight away into the question, for there is something very interesting I wish to share with all of you once I'm done with today's answer. So I'm hoping that I'll be finishing the answer a little earlier than usual so that I can talk a little after I'm done with the answer. So let me not tell you what it is about. Let me leave it for later. Let's head straight away to the question that we have for this week. And before that, let's offer our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. The question today is from a listener. I think she is introducing herself in that question. So we listen to the question. I'm very grateful that the listener has sent the question in her own voice. So let's listen to the question and let's see what answer we can come up for that.
Sairam, Brother Prem, my name is Deepa and I'm from Chennai. It would be helpful if you can share your experience or understanding of Swami's teaching through the Radio Sai Answering Booth program for a strange issue I'm facing for at least a year now. My problem is I have lost connection with Swami. I cannot understand how this has happened. I don't feel the love in my heart for Swami. I don't feel anything when I see Swami's photos or videos. I'm not interested to read any books on Swami. All the things which I used to enjoy about Swami have suddenly stopped, and I don't have any feelings about those things now. It is not that I have suddenly become very happy in life and so I have forgotten Swami. I have simply lost that connection, and this is making me very uncomfortable. Now I want to re-establish that connection with Swami, and I don't know what I should do for that. Could you please share anything from Swami's teachings in this regard? Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Deepa, for that question. Well, you say you've lost the connect with Swami and you've lost that love that was there before. Well, if that really was the case, you wouldn't be asking this question. The very fact that you feel that you're missing something and you want to re-establish that connect and it's making you restless is a sign that love is there. And I'll elaborate on that as I go through the answer, but that's the one sentence answer if there was any, if I had to give for that question. But talking about the scenario itself, I know you say that it is strange, but it is actually not very uncommon. I think you've been very candid about it. You're openly asking about it. But this is honestly something which a lot of us do go through, and it's not very uncommon really in that sense. Because there are many, many people we happen to meet, you know, especially as part of the duties that we perform at Radio Sai. We meet a lot of people, we interview them. When we speak to them, we realize that, you know, they would have come to Swami very, very early, probably in the 50s, 60s. And thereafter, they would have lost contact with Swami for something like 20 years. And when we would be talking to them, it's like a huge gap, after which they've started coming back to Parthi and they've started coming back to Swami for Swami's darshan. And there, I think in the 60s and 70s, there was this huge number of young Westerners used to come from the United States and Europe, a lot of them. This was before Swami had established the educational institutions, and Swami did spend a lot of time with these people. Swami gave them they had a very beautiful time with Swami. Swami would call them for interviews regularly. Swami used to guide them personally in the interviews. Many of these people also never turned up after that for 20 years. It's not that they, lost faith or they did not love Swami anymore, but it's just that the course of life that they had taken took them away from the physical presence of Swami, and they never came back. And even that kind of emotional connect which you are referring to also seems to be drying up after a certain time. So it's not very uncommon in that sense, but it's very important, and it's very laudable that you're asking this question. So what are we supposed to do? You are feeling that there's something wrong that is happening, or this is not supposed to be happening, so I want to do something to set this right. So that's probably the first step. That craving that I want this thing to be set right, and I don't want to lose connect with my Swami. I think that probably is the underlying feeling which is most important. Everything that else that I'm going to say today is going to be general, but as long as you have that feeling, be sure you will find some way of connecting back to Swami. And even if that doesn't happen, Swami will find ways of connecting back to you. But nevertheless, I'll go through a few things which I have to tell as a general reply to why such a thing happens, and when such a thing happens, what are we expected to do, or is there anything generally that we can do which will help us out? Now, talking about this relationship with God itself, when we come and when we strike a relationship with God, when we talk about love for God, it's very similar and very strikingly similar to many of the other relationships that we have in our life, especially that of the relationship a child has with a mother, the relationship there is between two friends, and the relationship between what we refer to as interpersonal love, between a lover and the beloved. There's a striking similarity between all of these relationships and the relationship that we have with Swami. In fact, in many ways, the role of the avatar is to rekindle that sort of a interpersonal connect with God. Because if not for that, yes, we all have love for God, we have respect for God, we revere God, but we don't have that personal connect. When we talk about, when we were kids, before some of us came to Swami, when we read about somebody like Mirabai or somebody like any of these devotees who felt that the Lord was their beloved, or the Lord was their, their master. Not all of us, I think, were able to relate to that. Yes, we looked at God as somebody whom we turned to when we had problems, but that personal connect was not there. And that's why Swami would say that the role of an avatar, whenever it happens from age to age, one of the most important roles is to rekindle that personal connect with God. And Swami would say that God comes down equipped with two forms of love. And Swami would say Preeti and Vatsalyam. Vatsalyam is the love the mother has for the child. And Preeti is that kind of interpersonal love between two friends or between the lover and the beloved. So Swami would say, I come with that sort of a love to strike that kind of a relationship with you, because that's an entirely different topic altogether, how that kind of love helps us in our spiritual progress and how that bhakti will eventually lead us to vairagya and jnana. And Swami has spoken extensively about that. That's probably one of the predominant themes in Swami's discourses. That's a different point, but the very idea of the avatar coming in a human form is to rekindle that love which is personal, right? What you're referring to as that connect that we feel with Swami. And the reason why I'm making this comparison between the love that we have for God and the other relationships that we have in life is that in all of these, love remains, but the expression of love changes with time. The way, for example, we depend on our mothers when we were toddlers or when we were infants is completely different, and it's not the same way that we connect and depend on them as we grow up, right? The love is still there. You still love your mother. There is no doubt about that. But the way you relate to your mother, the way you depend on your mother has changed. So in that sense, the expression of love undergoes a change in any relationship with the passage of time, right? A couple of days back, I was seeing this very interesting documentary. It's a different topic altogether, but in that there was this elderly lady who was talking about her life's journey. She's an Australian. She travels and she goes to the United States, and she eventually gets involved in a life of crime. Then she serves a sentence for a few years in America, not because she was a bad person or something like that. Just she makes a few bad choices as she goes through her young life, and that's how she ends up in the prison serving time. And she eventually gets involved in what turns out to be an international scandal. But after all this, she eventually comes back home at the age of 40 or something like that. And when she comes back, the way her parents accept her back without any qualms, without any questions, at that moment she realizes, that is probably one of the truest forms of love that one person experiences, the love that parents have for their child. And at that moment she says that her faith in what a family is, and her faith in that love that exists between family, got rekindled. It's not that she lost that love was not there, but an event like that, when it happens, it rekindles that love which is there. And that's why we use that word rekindled. It's like, you have charcoal, and when you kindle that charcoal, the embers which are hidden behind the ashes come out, right? So that's what sometimes we face events, or we come across events in life which, in that sense, rekindle a love which was always beneath the surface. So similarly, the love that we feel for God is also, as I said, very, very strikingly similar to the love that exists between two people, right? The love that exists between a person and one's life partner. When you first fall in love with a person like that, right? The first moment, we've got hundreds of novels written about that, hundreds of dramas written about that, movies made on that. It's a very magical moment when you first fall in love with a person, right? And like typically it's described as stars in your eyes. Every time you think of that person, you tend to smile. It's a moment of extreme ecstasy, right? For the first time, connect with a person that you very, very deeply and personally fall in love with. But with years, when you marry that person, that love does not exist for 20, 30 years after that, right? It doesn't mean that the love has gone out. It's just that the nature of the love, or the expression of the love, has undergone a certain transformation. You don't feel that same love that you felt in the beginning, right? The nature and the expression of that love undergoes a change with the passage of time, right? In fact, this is probably one of the mistakes that youngsters do. The spark in that relationship, once it is gone after a certain period of time, they associate that spark and that joy that they feel initially to love. And when that is not there, they think that the love has gone out of the relationship, and they think that it's time to move out of the relationship or come out of the relationship. Yeah, that's actually an immature thing to do. When they don't realize that it is not love that has gone, but it's the expression of love which has changed over a period of time. Now, coming back to the love that we feel for God, that's what we're interested in, not in any other form of love here. So we're talking about the love that we feel for God. This relationship also undergoes a similar kind of a cycle, right? When we first come to Swami, either be it our first darshan or first when we come to know of Swami, I see this even in devotees who are coming now, who are making that contact with Swami now after Swami is not available in the physical form anymore. When Swami comes into that life, into our life, there is that first excitement, right? We go into raptures. Whenever we hear about Swami, we are like, we feel a warmth inside. Whenever you listen to a bhajan, you're crying. Whenever you see a video of Swami, you're so moved, right? That is like that initial period in any relationship which comes, where there is a sparkle, there is that joy and that depth of an emotional connect which is there. But with time, a part of it will go. It's not that completely we will lose that kind of connect with Swami. That's why I'm saying that don't take it that it's going to be gone and never come again. But a part of it will go. I think it's quite natural, because like any worldly relationship, in this relationship that we have with God also, there is an emotional component. And that's why Swami would say that what comes and goes is not devotion, but it's emotion. I'm not saying that there is no devotion if this happens, but what comes and goes is only an expression. It's an emotion, it's not devotion, right? So part of what we feel when we come to Swami and that excitement and that joy which we go through is something which is like that emotion which raises with any relationship in the world which we have and which changes over a period of time, right? And in that sense, emotions are not wrong. It's not like it's a bad thing that it goes up and comes down. It's not wrong in that sense. They also have a certain role to play. But when we mistake that emotional high for devotion, we make this mistake, right? Just like how I said, youngsters mistake that spark that one feels in the initial years of the relationship alone to mean love and feel that the love is gone when that spark eventually dies out. So the same thing happens even in this relationship that we strike with God. Initially, there's that phase where we are really stars in our eyes and we are so thrilled that it has happened. And I think, I'm sure most of us will be able to relate to that, especially those of us who have come a little later in our own life to Swami when we were able to consciously make or observe that change in us when Swami comes and you suddenly are filled with so much joy. You'll find yourself smiling without reason. You'll find yourself, you know, just waking up the morning and feeling that, oh, life is so beautiful, right? It's similarly in that sense with any relationship that we go through in the world. So a part of that also happens when we strike this relationship with Swami, because as Swami says, when he comes down in an avatar, in a sense, he connects to us in a similar kind of a relationship, Preeti and Vatsalya, as Swami would say. But one thing to remember before we move ahead in the answer, this relationship with God is similar to the worldly relationships that we have, but it is not the same. This is something it's very important to keep in mind. There's a basic difference between the relationship which we have with God and any other relationship that we have. And that difference is, in this relationship with God, one side is perfect. We are the imperfect side, for all you're wondering. I'm sure you would have guessed that. One side is perfect because God's love is perfect and our love is in the process of becoming perfect. Imagine the selfless love of parents, like the anecdote that I shared sometime back. Itself gives us an opportunity to ground ourselves and say that and review the way we look at life, right? Because of that selfless love that we see in our parents. Then how much more is the opportunity when you love Swami and Swami's love is perfect, right? So in this relationship which we strike with God, because that one side is perfect in its relationship, in its love, Swami is perfect in the love that he is showering, it gives us an opportunity to perfect our love in this relationship. And this is something which Swami would often tell us when we were students. Swami would say and Swami would emphasize that don't attribute any flaws to Swami's love. Don't think that Swami is partial. Don't think that Swami is being irrational. Because the moment we start doing that, we lose the opportunity to see the mistakes in us. Understand that Swami's love is perfect. Understand that whatever Swami does and says is done in the best interest for us. And once we are fixated in that idea or established in that idea, it gives us an opportunity to look at ourselves, the way we look at Swami, the way we love Swami, the way we are devoted, and correct our side of this equation, right? So that's just a point that I wanted to make in the passing, just to clear this big difference that is there between the relationships that we have in the world otherwise and the relationship that we have with Swami. So it's actually a short digression, but I thought it's important to just make that point. So what happens in a regular relationship when, as I said, that spark dies out or goes out after a period of time? We have to be mature to understand, first of all, and recognize that the love still exists and it's only the expression of love that's gone out. In a relationship, when you're talking about a relationship with a life partner, now you start looking for each other's interests. What makes the other person happy becomes a part of what makes you happy. What the other person needs becomes a part of what you are trying to achieve yourself, right? The interests of each other becomes each other's responsibility in that sense, right? So we express love as including the other person's likes and dislikes into our own likes and dislikes. That is the manner in which a mature relationship progresses, where that expression of love which comes out of an emotional up and down passes away after a period of time, but a more mature expression of that same love starts manifesting in that relationship. This is something we have to do in our relationship with Swami too. Point number one, if that emotional excitement that we initially felt is not to be seen, don't panic. Second point, the love will always be there, right? Sometimes it may be rekindled later in life and a certain thing happens. As I said, many people don't come here for 20 years and eventually they finally come and something happens and some, either it would be a disaster or they would have finally, some miracle would have happened and they kind of reconnect with Swami. But that's not what we want. We don't want to be losing a few years and then coming back again. Right? That's the whole point of the question. We don't want that to happen, but the reason why I'm saying that is, as Swami would say, it never happens that the love completely goes, because the love that we have for Swami is very, very fundamental, because Swami is the self. Swami is not another individual. End of the day, whether we realize it or not, Swami is our very own self. So that love will never go away. That is the basis of our existence itself. But we also want to remain conscious in that love that we have for Swami. And that's what the whole thing is about, right? So is there a way by which it can be done? Is there a way by which this love can be captured in our life in a conscious manner? And there is a way, and that is what we must strive to do, and that's what I want to talk about. When we first come to Swami, we all are really thrilled, you know, and because Swami's personality is like that. Swami's persona is so very attractive, you know, physically, and his presence itself. There's absolutely no credit to us because we have fallen in love with Swami, because that's Swami's personality. You know, anybody in Swami's presence will feel so drawn to Swami, because Swami is literally a very, very magnetic personality. It fills us with a very, very special feeling, and so many devotees have experienced this. You know, they might have come as detractors, they might have come as people who are very cold towards Swami, but being in the presence of Swami stirs something within, right? And that's why I said it's no credit to us, it's because the way Swami is. But that is the first moment I was talking about, where that you find a sudden rush of emotions within you, and there's a sudden spark, and suddenly you connect with Swami. But that emotion will fizzle out after a while, and that's why Swami says that this emotion that you're feeling has to be captured. And Swami would often use these four words, and I'm sure you would have heard it in Swami's discourses, where Swami says, chamatkar, sanskar, paropkar, to sakshatkar. That's something which Swami would very beautifully say. Now, when you talk about chamatkar, the literal translation of that word is miracle. And Swami would say that when you have a miracle in your life, and you should ensure that the miracle leads to transformation. But that word chamatkar also means, in a literal sense, that sparkle that you feel, that excitement and that sudden warmth that you feel towards Swami, that word also means an emotional spike, literally in that sense. So Swami says that when that chamatkar happens, when Swami walks into your life, or when you make that first contact with Swami, Swami says that chamatkar has to be captured, and it can be captured in our life through sanskar, right? And sanskar is nothing but a change in the way we lead our life. And sanskar is not any kind of change. There are a lot of people who come to Swami and they change a lot instantly, and there's a huge change in the way they lead their life, but it's for a very short time, and after that it just fizzles out. Even that change is not constant. That's why it's not any kind of change. Sanskar is a slow and permanent refinement of our life itself. So that is the best way to capture that, this love and connect that we feel for Swami. That chamatkar which happens has to be captured in this slow process of refinement of every aspect of our life. And that is why the change is the best expression of devotion. Swami would often say that your transformation is the best sign that you're devoted. It's not about we crying when we hear bhajans, or it's not about, we always wanting to listen to Swami's stories, and it's not about listening to Radio Sai or reading books of Swami. It's that change. It's how much are we ready to change and transform our lives is the most true expression of devotion. Everything else is like that emotion which comes and goes. The true devotion, if it can be expressed, it can be expressed as the change that we bring about in our own lives, right? So as Swami would say, love for God and faith is fundamental, right? It's always there. But the very purpose the avatar comes for is to kindle that love. And when he kindles it, it is like a challenge that Swami is throwing to us, right? Swami says, I've come into your life. Now I captured you. I've given you this sparkle in you. What are you going to do about that? Right? And after that, Swami will leave it to us. Swami has come into our lives and done this beautiful thing for us. But after that, he leaves it to us as to, now what are you going to do about me coming into your life? Right? There's another reason why bringing this kind of a tangible change in our life is very, very important. What is it that stands between us and Swami? Especially when you say that you're not able to connect to Swami like before, or you don't feel that love before, like before. Whether it's for this question or for that matter, anything, what stands between us and Swami is this mind, right? That mind is the physical manifestation of Maya or delusion, which, as Swami would say it. So it's the mind that actually stands between us and Swami. So when we do certain things for Swami, when we change our lives and say that I'm going to do these things because these are things that Swami likes, I'm going to change my eating habits in such a way because this is what Swami likes. I'm not going to dress in this way because Swami doesn't like that. I'm going to be regular at these things because this will make Swami happy. When we make such changes in our lives, especially very, very strong things which are not very easy to do, right? At such times, you are actually sending a very strong message to your mind saying that this is important for me and I'm going to follow this come what may. Let's say that you have the habit of going for weekly bhajans. If you're feeling, now I don't feel that same connect anymore. I don't enjoy bhajans like how I enjoyed when I first came to Swami. If you're feeling in that manner, it's all right. No problem. Tell yourself, no, this is important for me and I'm going to do it. Don't worry about the absence of that connection. Sometimes when we do this way, we are actually sending a very strong message to our own mind that this is important to me, and eventually the mind will fall in line, right? So this is a very important thing. That's why that change is so very important. We constantly ensure that this initial sparkle that we feel for Swami is captured in this slow process of refinement that happens in our life. Finally, you may already be doing whatever I mentioned so far, right? Whatever tips I've been giving, you might be still doing it, and you might say that I've been doing all this, I've been going for regular bhajans, and I've been trying to change my life in accordance to what Swami wants. Even then, I think there will be periods like this where you don't feel that connect with Swami, because our connect with Swami is not always emotional, right? And it need not be, and that's not necessary also. But if we were to look around and find out who were those kind of people who had that sort of emotional connect to God all the time, right? If that's what we want, if that's what we are striving for, who are those people who actually had that kind of a constant emotional connect with God? They are saints like Meera or Tyagaraja or Tukaram, or the hundreds of thousands of saints that we read about in our scriptures and in our modern literature, right? These are the people who manage to maintain that kind of an emotional connect to God all throughout their life. The difference between the way we lead our lives and the way these saints led their lives is only one. For me, I am still the center of my life. And for these kind of people, these kind of elevated souls, for them, God had become the center of their life. And that is why our connect with Swami was always more intense when a situation came where we were forced to turn to Swami, right? Because I'm the center of my life, when something happened that was endangering me or something happening that was endangering my interests or the interests of the people who are dear to me, that's when with so much focus I turned to God. And that's why, you know, Mother Kunti makes that prayer, because she has observed her life through the many ups and downs she's gone through, and she realizes that she's able to think of Krishna maximum when she's in trouble. So she goes to Krishna and says, when Krishna comes and asks her, what do you want? She says, give me more troubles, because I feel that that's the only time I'm looking at you. And that's the case with all of us, because we are the center of our lives, and when we are attacked, when our interests are attacked, we tend to turn to Swami more. And if we want to have that constant connect, yeah, you could make the prayer of Mother Kunti that let me always be in trouble so I can turn to you. But what's the real way of getting there is to say, Swami, how do I make you the center of my life? So that when Swami becomes the center of our lives, everything that we do, every choice that we make, everything that we strive for in life is actually for this individual who's become the center of our lives, right? That is the time when that connection will be there constantly. I'm not saying it's wrong that we are the center of our lives. I think that's the most natural thing. Most of us turn to God because of that, right? It happens with most of us, and that is the case with even people like me and my colleagues here who are sitting at Radio Sai. We might be talking so much about Swami, we might be reading so much, and we might be living in Prashandalyam. I feel still, even for us, we are the center of our lives. It takes a long time to make that shift complete, where Swami alone is the center of our lives. And the way to get there is by pushing Swami up in the list of priorities that we have. Make him, if not the center of our lives, at least the most important factor of our life, where every decision we are doing it according to what Swami likes and what Swami wants. And this is the manner in which you actually eventually make Swami the center of our lives. And when that happens, this connect will be constant. It will be emotional, it will be even otherwise, right? But if not for that, the mind drifts away, the mind is busy with all the other things. But as I said, you know, it again goes back to the desire. I've made this point many times before in reply to other questions, where you fall down, I mean, you are not judged by the fact that you've fallen down, but you're judged by whether you want to get up and which direction you wish to walk when you've fallen down, right? So very fact that you feel that I don't have this connect with Swami, but I want to have this connect for Swami, your nature is defined by what you want, not of what you are right now, right? And that's why if you really crave and pine for that connection with Swami, if you feel that I enjoyed that phase and I want that phase again, that itself defines you as a devotee. And be sure, I mean, after all this, the best thing to do is to pray to Swami to give us that love, because the love that we felt for Swami in the first place, or we feel now, or we're going to feel in the future, that itself is Swami's gift to us. It's not something of our own making, right? But these are things which Swami expects us to do when we've been given that blessing of having that feeling of love for Swami. We have to capture it in the form of the refinement which happens in our life, that sanskara which happens in our life. So that's the answer I wanted to give. Thank you, Sister Deepa, for that question. As I said, it's a lot of us do feel this. A lot of us do go through this phase in our life, but not all of us might express it and voice it out. Thank you for asking that question. Maybe it must have helped other listeners too. It definitely helps me all the time. Every question that is asked is a process by which I remind myself of what Swami expects of each one of us. So thank you for that. If you have any further questions to ask based on the question that you asked or the answer I gave, feel free to write to me. So now that I'm finished with the answer, now let's come to what I wanted to share with you. What I'm going to speak now is probably personal reflections, and there is a reason why I want to do that. It's because today is a very special episode. I didn't mention it in the beginning of the program. I'm mentioning it today. today happens to be the 100th episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. It's been a fascinating journey for me. I don't know about, I hope it's as fast, it has been as fascinating for all of you. Over a period of 2 years, the variety of questions that have come, the variety of opportunities which is presented to us to go back to Swami's literature and read and understand that for every problem that we may face in life or we are facing in life, there is solution in Swami's literature. I think all of us knew it intuitively that we can always find answers in Swami's literature, but I think this program has given at least me the opportunity to literally know that by proof, that for everything we can turn to Swami and there is an answer for Swami. So a very, very hearty expression of gratitude to each one of you who has asked questions on the show. The hundreds and hundreds of you who have written mails giving your feedback and expressing your appreciation of what has been happening on the show. I mean, all of that meant a lot to me. I probably cannot name each one of you who has written feedbacks to me, but really it's, I owe a lot to all of you because this is not something which is easy to do. Not that it's difficult to find answers in Swami's message. Swami's message is so profound, anybody sitting here doing the show probably could have even done better than me in finding answers from Swami's literature. But the ability to do that with the courage and confidence that, yes, I can do that, it's not very easy. At least for me, it was not very naturally forthcoming. So all of your mails of appreciation meant a lot. I can't tell you how much it meant because it meant so really much. But this whole process has taught me so much, and I think a couple of minutes I wanted to spend about what has it taught to me, and I'm sure you'll all be able to relate to much of that. One of the things which Swami would often say when we were students is that all the knowledge that you require is actually within you. Not only that, all the knowledge that we require is in Swami's message. Swami would say that all that knowledge is within you. And all that you have to do is look within. All that you have to do is create around yourself an environment by which it is easy to dive within yourself and look for that wisdom. This is something which Swami would say, and yes, whatever Swami says, we accept it. But during the course of this program, many times when questions would come and when I would think about what would Swami say for these things, even before I would go into Swami's literature, I would muse as to what would be Swami's reply from whatever we have heard from Swami, what would be Swami's answer to a question like this. And many times I would come up with a certain explanation or certain examples by which how this has to be answered or how Swami would want this to be answered. And at a later time when I would go back to Swami's discourse, I would find that the explanation that Swami would have given would have been strikingly similar to what I would have thought of myself. And sometimes it would even have the same examples that I would have come up with. Only those examples would be a little more better in the way they are completely expressing what Swami was explaining. But it would be really striking that I would have come up with the answer and I would find the same explanation in Swami's discourse. It's not to say that I knew so well. It is a clear indication that all that Swami is saying is actually within us and we just have to look within. And this is so true for all of you. It's not that I can do this and so I'm doing this program and I'm getting questions from you. It's not like that. But this reaffirmation of what Swami had told us, that everything that you need to know is actually within you, and all that Swami is doing is creating a situation by which we can turn within. And this has been a experience. I can't really point out to one thing because there's so many, many times it has happened. I would see the same explanation Swami giving in a discourse in answer to explaining a concept which is very similar. So this is something which is very, very fascinating to me. But then you would ask me that if all the knowledge is to be found inside and if it is there within, why are Radio Sai Answering Booth? Why are you asking listeners to ask you the questions and you are doing the searching for them? Well, the Swami who could raise people from the dead, the Swami who could cure every conceivable disease the humankind can contract, built a super specialty hospital. The same Swami who can transfer knowledge by his touch, the same Swami who can transfer the greatest of wisdoms through his silence, started a university. And I think it's in the same way that I am running the Radio Sai Answering Booth, and we always say this, the institutions that Swami has set up, more than anything, gave an opportunity for the people who are involved in those institutions to be an instrument of Swami. And I think that is what Radio Sai Answering Booth is all about. It has given me an opportunity to stand here and speak to all of you as Swami's instrument. If it has benefited all of you, I think that's an advantage, or that's an added bonus to me. But yes, this opportunity to be Swami's instrument, I think, is the most important thing. I'm going to be talking about that a little more before I conclude the program. But before I get to that, the other very, very striking thing was, many times when we are lost in our own problems, when we are thinking about the problems we are facing practically within our family, in our corporate life, we often get burdened with this idea that, why is all this happening to me? Why are all the wrong things happening to me? But we don't realize that the most common thing, or the most unifying thing across the world, is actually the problems that we face. So many people face the same problems that we face, and that's what happens. And many, many times I get feedback from people saying that, oh, that person asked a question. Actually, I had the same question. I've been having it for a while, and I'm having the same problem. I'm trying to figure out how to handle that thing, right? And it pans across cultures. In fact, I'd like to read a mail that I got from a listener from Germany. I'm not going to name any of the listeners whom I'm going to be quoting. And there are many, many others whom I cannot name. That's why I don't want to name anybody. But this was a very well-articulated feedback mail. That's why I want to read it out. Please, when I read this mail, don't think that I'm trying to tell you how much people praise me. That's not the idea at all, because that's one thing which Swami is trying to stamp out of us through the beautiful experiences that he gives us. And this listener from Germany wrote, and she actually wrote about this idea that how our problems are so common, though we are so separated by land and culture. She goes on to say, today I'm sending you this email to express the joy and wonder I'm experiencing through the answering booth you're hosting. Please don't take it as personal praise, just as an expression of gratitude and happiness. I can't believe I came to know of this only some weeks ago. Since then, I preferably listen to the shows while cooking and doing the dishes. And actually, I caught myself preparing somewhat more elaborate dishes or cleaning up extra decently to not have to stop the recording. Really, to me, both the talks and topics are just so valuable. So one of the benefits of having long-drawn answers, I guess, somebody at least is doing a more elaborate dinner because of that. And she goes on to say, and the mere format of the program is something so unifying. Really, it's amusing to see how, regardless of nationality, language, or cultural background, we appear to be haunted by similar questions. All those outer attributes really don't matter at all when we turn towards the divine. I'm very much enchanted by the thought that from all over the world, questions pour into Prashanta Nilayam, and Swami is giving them a platform and voice. I'm also amazed by the process of answering itself. When you read out the question, my mind goes like, oof, that's a tough one. No idea, but I'm really curious about the answer. And in the course of the answer, I realize once again, God is simple. It really is so simple. What an elevating experience to follow the course from a seemingly nebulous human confusion to that serene and loving simplicity. I tell you from my heart, and this sharing, explaining, and loving remembrance is simply precious. It is quite difficult for me to put words on this, but just the very manner in which all this is presented transports the quality of humanness that Swami expects from us, words of warm commitment, clarity, and humility. What I'm trying to say is, thank you so very much. This is really such a sweetest gift he is giving us all through you. Amazing how Swami has so many ways of reminding us of him, and at this moment, to me, the answering booth is an especially enjoyable and delightful one. Obviously, he has already profusely blessed you, certainly, to serve us as his messenger, and I'm so very happy for you. And once again, astonished how perfectly Swami plays his instruments. And nevertheless, it is my strong and wholehearted prayer that he may firstly continue to shower his golden love. And that's how the mail ends. Thank you so very much for this mail. The reason I wanted to read out this mail is, yes, that's how our problems literally unify us. And the way she's so very beautifully said, the answers are so very simple. Many times after an answer, one of the feedback that I would give is, we could completely relate to the answer and, you know, it was so simple. I think that is probably the best feedback to get, because it is simple. Swami was always simple. Swami is always simple. It's you and I who complicate the things, right? And I'm sure I'm complicating the answers much, much more than what Swami is sometimes, most of the times. But when we look at it, it's simple things. It just has, we just have to get up and start doing things. So that was one of the very beautiful mails that I got. And the other thing which kept repeating over and over again as an experience for me was how I could sit here and come up with answers, but it was Swami who was making the answers actually relevant to the people who were listening to it, right? And sometimes the answer becomes more relevant to another person than the person who's asked the question. There was a period in time, I think initially when I started the program, where I was getting a lot of questions based on the institution of marriage. I think a series of questions which came on marriage and mother-in-law and, you know, the role of a daughter towards her parents after marriage, a series of things, especially on marriage. And at that time, I received this mail, again, a very sweet mail from a youngster. I'll read out a few lines from that mail and then I'll tell you about it. She goes on to say, I just wanted to let you and the entire team know that Radio Sai makes my everyday. Grateful to Swami for inspiring you to start the Answering Booth series. Like you mentioned, the answers not only clarifies the person who raised the question, but also clarifies many others' doubts. Last week's session was indeed amazing. I have always had this doubt on why we should marry. I was of the opinion that we are inviting more bondage into our lives and falling into more karma. In today's world, most of the marriages, like you had mentioned, end very soon. Currently, I'm single, grateful and happy, and wanted to stay the same way even though my parents are busy searching for the groom. But you had mentioned that marriages teach us to forget ourselves and live for others, shifting the focus from I to we. I'm sure this one line has opened a whole new perspective of looking at married life. I was just telling somebody about this view of mine on Monday, and Swami clarifies me on Thursday through your program. Swami is amazing. So this is the listener who wrote, and she actually kept writing the next few weeks, because every few weeks there was something which Swami was telling, which was regarding marriage. I mean, Swami had arranged the program in such a way that Swami inspired her to say yes for a marriage. And then Swami said, how do you live in a joint family? How do you respond to your in-laws? And then how do you take care of your parents after your marriage? She said it was a complete package. Swami gave me everything that I needed for this life. And I'm also grateful, happy to say that after a couple of months, this young listener did drop into studio to give the invitation of her marriage. But the thing is, for all that I know, these three or four answers might have been meant for that one person, right? And that is what really fascinates us. Be it in any program that we do or anything that we do, we can sit here, we can do the best we can. When a question comes to me, I can go back to Swami's discourse and I can do my homework and I can put in my effort. But I cannot manufacture or I cannot orchestrate the effect that an answer has on a person. And this is something which has happened so many times. In one of the initial programs, I had a question where a friend asked about, had written a question to me. He wished to be anonymous then, and he was telling that there is a friend of his who... He's known him from childhood. He grew up with him, went to the same school, went to the same college, and eventually they were colleagues in the same workplace. And this friend of his was taking to bad ways, and he wanted to correct him. So he went and told him that this is not right, you should not be doing all these things. And that friend did not take his advice. So this person had written to me saying that, what do I do? How do I correct my friend? Right? So I had given an answer, and I gave the answer to the person who asked the question. A couple of days later, the person who asked me the question sends me a reply which really bowls me over, because he says, he didn't expect this, but the friend whom he was referring to happened to hear to the program that I did on that day, and he instantly recognized it was this friend who was asking about him. And the very fact that that friend cared so much, moved him so much, and he went and, you know, he felt so sorry for not listening to his friend. He went back. He said, I'm going to mend my ways. I'll do it. Do whatever was told on the program. Thank you for correcting me. When I couldn't have done that. You know, I can only give a answer, but Swami ensures that the answer reaches where it has to reach. And when Swami does that, you realize how insignificant you are in the scheme of things. And that is the beauty, right? In any other situation in life, if somebody were to put you down, somebody were to make you feel small, I think you will feel hurt. But this is a situation that Swami puts us through when we are so grateful that Swami is making us feel so small. And Swami is making us feel that we are the instrument and nothing more than that. And many, many times this has happened. And one other occasion where one of the listeners wrote back to me, that question was about the problem that the listener is facing in corporate life. And I had given a very, very general answer. Now going back to it, if I think of it, it's a very general answer as to how we always face troubles in life and we cannot get over it. And that was the answer that I had given. And I had used a chinna katha, which Swami would often say, about a man who goes into a military hotel and asks for idli sambar. And Swami would say that the same absurd thing that you are doing by going into the world and asking for happiness, because there is no happiness in the world, it's a stupid thing to do. That's what Swami would say. And I just quoted this chinna katha, and I think I'd made a couple of other statements, I don't recall now, and I'd said that this is what I feel you should think of. And this person writes back, and she says that only Swami could do this, because that answer I know was absolutely meant for me, because few years ago, I did the same thing. I walked into a military hotel and I asked for idli sambar. And she said that she was pregnant then and she was very hungry. She was not seeing where she was walking into. And she said, when you mentioned that chinna katha, I knew that Swami was saying that, look, this answer is for you. Concentrate. This is for you. How can I say that, look, I gave you the most appropriate answer? How can I claim that I know how to answer your question? I know only to speak, I know only to be here and make myself available to Swami and see. And Swami does the magic, right? And that's the lesson which Swami drives again and again. And we are so smart that we tend to forget it, and we are so grateful to Swami that he reminds us again and again and again endlessly about this. Before I conclude, I want to conclude with one of the most moving mails that I got. I had actually spoken about this also a year back on the Morning Glory show. I want to read that entire mail for you today. It was a mail which left me with mixed emotions. Of course, there's a very painful account in the mail, but the way Swami has made this thing happen really fills me with so much joy, and I wanted to take this opportunity of the 100th episode to share this with all of you. I got this mail from a very random person. And I've never received mails from him. We've never received for any other program feedback from this person. And this was the first mail that I received from this person. I'm going to read it out. I am quite surprised myself that I'm penning down words praising any guru, as I never believed in this concept of guru. I heard your program 2 weeks back, and thereafter I have literally become a fan of yours. Wow. I do not stay presently in India, though born in India. I completely believe in the concept of guru by now, as what you speak in your answering booth program is not from a normal human brain. One may have mastered all holy literatures of the world, but one who inspires you or touches your heart can only be God himself. So my pranams to your guru, Sri Satya Sai Baba. I do not know if you can take some time out to read how accidentally I happened to hear Radio Sai, and so on. So once you confirm, I would like to share something. But trust me, friend, you changed my life. So this was the first mail that I received from this person. Needless to say, I replied immediately saying that, please tell me, how did you happen to listen to this program? I would love to know the story behind it. And this was the next mail that I got from that person, which was very, very deeply moving. So this is what he wrote. Sairam, Brother Prem, thank you so much for your warm welcome and really a prompt response than I expected. I was a fun-loving little boy of 11. I have a brother and a sister. My parents have always been very loving. From my childhood, we had a sannyasi as a family guru. I believed in God, guru, prayers till an incident happened. We had some financial difficulties and this guru always appeared very helpful. Slowly, by means of help, he converted us into Christians. He convinced my parents and Lord Jesus was made our family deity. I too was molded as I was a little child. One day I happened to go for a movie with my girlfriend and classmate, and this guru got to know. He saw us together, and even now I do not think that having a girlfriend is something bad. She was a Muslim girl, of course. Anyway, he told my parents and they punished me by sending me away from home to this guru's place for a week. That time, this guru put in my head that I was a worst sinner and by obeying him, I can wash away my sins. You won't believe, obeying him was to get sexually harassed by him. I could not bear more than 3 nights and finally, I was successful in running away from his place. I did not go to my parents too, as they would never believe if I were to say what had happened. I had a very, very tough life thereafter. I was arrested by police and was in remand home for 2 years for stealing some money as I was very hungry, and hunger can make you do all that one may not want to do otherwise. Then I further got involved in crimes, and somehow this went on till I became 16. Again, a girl who was a very good person came into my life, and I was in strong love with her. She slowly turned me away from the life of crime. She helped me in every way, and I could again start studying and finish my higher studies too. So I was sitting with her one day and Googling for jobs around. In a very weird way, somehow your website popped out, and I was trying to close it, and it just wouldn't close. And suddenly I heard your voice that said, "Closer we go within, clearer the things appear to us that are outside." I think this was in context of an explanation you were giving about a quote. Anyway, that made me hear your answering booth further, and each word you spoke, I felt it was meant for me. The very central idea of spirituality got into my head. That which I never understood when I was a Hindu or even after I was converted. Thank you so much, dear friend. I feel my life is worth today after hearing your program. This is what I said, you know, how can somebody be sitting here and ensure that whatever we speak, or, I mean, I can only ensure that what I say is as consistent as it can be with Swami's message. But to take that message and literally sow it where it is required, put it in the heart and put it into the ear which needs it the most, I think only Swami can do that. And I think it's his immense grace that he is allowing us to be a part of this, right? And that is why for me, I can't thank you all enough for giving this opportunity for me. And this is 100 episodes, and probably it's a good time to tell you that I might be coming to the end of the journey of the answering booth itself. It will go on for a couple of weeks. If I've missed out any of your questions, please send me a quick reminder. I think I've tried to, as much as possible, cover all the questions that came to me, and I'm hoping to start something new in the few weeks to come, but I can say that it would be another thing which would take us closer to Swami and Swami's message, and I'm sure that's the only thing that we always strive to do. But if at all there are more questions coming, I will every now and then go back to the answering booth and try to answer those questions. But this has really been such a fascinating journey, and, you know, we know that Swami is the be-all and end-all of our life, but just like the question that we had today, sometimes we probably miss out. You know, we get into a routine, we get into even bhajans and seva and singing of Swami and thinking of Swami, even that could probably sometimes become a routine. And it is out of Swami's immense love that he comes back into our lives, he rekindles that love again and again and again, and keeps reminding us who we are and whose we are, whom do we belong to. And we can't really thank Swami enough for that. But I thank the Swami and all of you for this beautiful journey that you all have gifted me. And with that thought, I offer this program at Swami's Lotus Feet. All right, dear listeners, let's wrap up this week's program with a beautiful song. On the other side of the song, you will be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of today, the Vahini Satsang. I'll join you all again next week. It is going to be a Radio Sai Answering Booth program because I still have a couple of questions that I wish to complete before I move on. So I'll meet you all again next week, 7:30 p.m. with the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth.
प्यार तेरा है फूलों जैसा बातें जैसे गीत सुधा तेरी मुस्कानों में लगता मधुर कोई संगीत सजा पुकारों की मूरत हो हर सांसों की जरूरत हो तुम मीत मेरे नवनीत सखा साईं मां साईं
to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.